All right, welcome to Crosstalk. Thank you so much for joining. Please like, subscribe, and support us if you like it. Share it. Comment what you think, what you don't like, what you like, how you're feeling. And we are a nonprofit, so our goal is to eventually raise money for scholarships and helping people who need it and can't afford it. I have a very special guest. My good and old friend Peter is here. Peter,
what's up, Irene?
I'm so excited.
Me too.
We've done it all together.
Yes, we have.
So Peter and I actually, like, we're getting kind of wasted at the same time. So, and we're in recovery at the same time. So it's pretty cool. We've been through a lot, and take it away.
Yes. So Irene is one of the few people in recovery that I've actually used with. So this is fun.
Yeah.
thanks for having me. Want me to start from the beginning?
Yeah. So what we do on Crosstalk is we kind of go through your story, tell us a little bit about what it was like, how you grew up. You can get as nitty gritty as you want. you know, what happened, and then more about recovery, like, what did recovery look like? What did it look like in the beginning? And what does it look like today?
Sounds good. So I grew up in California. I come from a family of addicts, some not, but mostly addicts. And my parents met in New York, in Brooklyn. And my father was a drug addict. And my mother moved me to California to get away from my father. And so I never really knew my dad, and she remarried, and I grew up thinking that he was my father. Mm-hmm. I was raised very Christian, almost to the point of religious abuse. You know, like, we lived in the church. You know, now that I'm older, I kind of understand what we were doing. But I remember being on the side of the street waving pro-life signs, which I didn't know at the time were. And people would drive by and, like, give us the finger. And I'd be like, what's going on? When I was 9 years old, my mother passed away. And like I said, I thought the guy that she remarried was my dad. So things were kind of in limbo. Like I mentioned before, my father was a drug addict who, mid-80s, early 90s, during the HIV AIDS epidemic, got AIDS from sharing needles and then gave it to my mother. And my mother, I always say, casualty of war. You know, she was an innocent bystander. So she passed away, and I ended up, my stepfather, who I thought was my dad, remarried, and she had three kids. So it was me, my sister, and her three kids. And she was actually very abusive. She, like, physically abused us. And I remember Child Protective Services coming to the school, asking me why I had knots on my head. And, but even at that young age, I knew not to, like, if I said anything, they were going to take me away. So, you know, I just sucked it up and
don't. You'd rather be there than
be home. You know, right. It's my home. I didn't finish seventh grade. I probably did a couple months. And, they were telling me that I'm going to go live with my aunt and uncle. Now, like, we stopped being, like, after my mother passed, we stopped being the Christian radicals. Okay. And then my aunt Laura, who I was going to move in with at the time, were Christian radicals again. They lived on church property. And I went back, and, like, even when I share my experience, Strength and Hope in meetings, I always share that over the time that I was living with them, it was like 3 month period, give or take, they started taking things away that I had in the time being.
Because they weren't, like, Christian.
And they took away the game Zelda from me because it had magic. I share it all the time. They had magic in it, and I wasn't allowed to play a game that had magic in it. And I was like, I cannot live like this. You know, like, this is too much. And my grandfather from New York would always tell me, come live with me. Come live with me. But, you know, I was a kid. I didn't want to leave.
And he was the grandfather that was sober.
Yes, he's the one that, you know, my grandfather, who I end up going to move in with, he's the one that was clean and sober decades at the time. So I moved in with him.
And by this time at 11, like, did you have any behavioral issues?
Oh,
like,
yeah, I was a bad kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I lied all the time. I was always good in school, but I didn't want to go to school. Mm-hmm. Gun fights, and especially, you know, coming to New York, not doing the seventh grade, you know, they put me in special classes. So I was in like the special classes in my junior high school and, you know, behavioral issue classes. And then by the time I went to high school, the classes were so special that they were so easy for me that I was just like, I'm not even going because it was just dumb.
Right.
You know, and I couldn't keep my attention. My attention was out the window.
Right.
And I started hanging out with the kids that were, you know, smoking weed, cutting school. And, you know, that's how it all started for me.
Around what age?
Around 14.
14.
15, 14, 15, around that age. And, you know, I'd start smoking pot and then, you know, going to the high school, you know, the teen nightclubs and, you know, drinking with your friends. And, you know, that's how it all started. It was just a party. And my grandfather, you know, looking back on it, like he used to talk, you know, like he used to drag me to meetings and I would hate going to the meetings. And, you know, my grandmother too, and his ex-wife, you know, my grandma, and she used to bring me to meetings and she'd tell her friends that it was my birthday. Even when it wasn't my birthday, she'd be like, give him $20. And I'd like, I want to go with grandma, you know, but when I'd go with grandpa, it was always serious at the NA meeting.
Yeah.
Know? And, you know, sit down and like, he would tell me that I'm an addict at like 14, 15 years old. And like, I didn't want to hear that. You know, what are you talking about? You're the addict. You're the one that used heroin. I'm just smoking weed. Like, leave me alone.
Right.
You know, and.
But he saw a lot of himself in you, probably some transference or something, whatever it's called.
So, you know, it went from there to, you know, not going to school anymore. I got my GED at 16 because I was like, you mean there's a class I could take to finish school right now and I could work. And, you know, I started working. He always got me a job. You know, he never bought me anything. He bought me the things I needed. But if I wanted anything extra, like he would get me good jobs
because
he knew so many people throughout the rooms that he had connections everywhere. And I would get jobs. And I sold a lot of drugs. It started with selling weed. And it went from selling weed to meeting someone that I would have Xanax connects. And I would sell a lot of Xanax. And then it progressed to meeting some real gangster guys that taught me how to recompress cocaine. And we were cutting cocaine. You know, I'm 17 years old, cutting cocaine. And, you know, I'd be going to the clubs, partying on the weekends, you know, selling Xanax, selling cocaine.
At 16, 17.
17.
Yeah.
And doing these things and making money while I was doing it. And then I'd slow down Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then get ready to do it all over again on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Making tons of money and spending tons of money. I went from selling drugs and I knew after I got my GED and, you know, I had a couple of jobs and it was getting to be 17, 18. My grandfather had told me you need to figure out what you're going to do. And then that's when I decided I'm going to go to culinary school. And I don't know if you remember this, but I was in culinary school with a class before you.
I do know that. I don't remember this, but I do know this.
Yes. So that's how I met some of our other mutual friends that we know together.
Yeah.
And, you know, I started going to culinary school and I loved every minute of it. Like, cooking is almost like a drug to me. Like it brings something out of me that I really enjoy. And I was hanging out with these kids who, Manhattan kids that had a lot of money and I'd go out and party with them. And we were doing a lot of cocaine, you know, a lot of cocaine. And they would go to class the next day and I would continue to do more cocaine and miss class. And until I eventually missed enough class to where they said, you know, like you can't continue with this class anymore because you missed too many hours. And you need to re-sign up. And eventually, you know, I stopped going. I didn't care about re-signing up because I was using. And it wasn't even that bad yet. It was just the partying time, you know.
Yeah.
And I ended up going to a club in Manhattan. A lot of you may know it as Limelight. It was Avalon at the time. And I went to sell two undercover informants. Some Percocets and no, I sold them some marijuana and I gave them a Percocet. Doesn't matter. I gave it to them and they ended up giving me marked money. And I, was given an option in the courtroom by the judge. You either take this program or you go to jail. And I was just, I'll take the program. And
this was your first rehab.
Yes, they put me in outpatient, and just to give you an idea how strict my grandfather was, within 4 months of me being in the outpatient, my grandfather knew that I wasn't doing the right thing. You know, I was scheming the system. He called up my probation officer, my drug treatment court officer, and said, I kicked him out of the house. He's homeless. Do whatever you need to do with him.
Oh, because if you
were homeless, they put you right in inpatient. I was still beating the system. I would get drug tested. And because I was able to manipulate the system, I went and got a good job. I was a cook at the time. You know, I went back to school.
Yeah, I was going to say. So I missed the part because I'm that's when I met you.
When I was going to court, before they put me in that program, I went and I told the judge, I need to get back into school, and it would keep me out of jail. So I signed back up in school quick so they couldn't put me in jail. It gave them a reason, you know,
right. Maybe
this kid's trying to do something, you know, let's let him rock. And so I went back to school, and that's how I met you.
Yes, that's how we met each other.
I had to live in Harlem, and I was working in Manhattan. We had already graduated, and I convinced my therapist, whatever you want to call him, the person that's keeping tabs on you, that because I work nights, they should let me go home earlier and come back to the treatment center later, because you're really only allowed a week and pass from Saturday to Sunday night. I'd convince them to let me leave Friday morning and come back Monday. You know, like,
of course you did. You're charming.
So I would, so I knew that I had 72 hours if I did cocaine on Friday, I'd be clean by Monday and I'd be good to go, you know, and I would drink cranberry juice and this and that. I've even gotten to the point where I was drinking apple cider vinegar before drug tests, like destroying my stomach, and it was horrible. And they caught me with a few dirty urns, and they locked me up in the Tombs in Manhattan, you know, on Center Street.
What's the Tombs?
Jail.
Okay.
And the judge would like, you're going to jail for 3 days. And I'd be like, I have school tomorrow, okay? Or like work, and they'd let me go to work or school, and then go to jail the next day. So I'd go in with snow pants, put some nicotine patches on. And
oh, my God.
It was crazy. You know,
the lengths that we go.
Yes, exactly. Wow. And so, you know, they caught me a couple times with dirty urns, but, like, I didn't mess around that much. And I was supposed to graduate from this program. It was, like, two years, a couple months. It was supposed to be a year, but it took me 2 1/4. And I knew I was leaving the next day. And I, you know, like, I figured that I can't drink liquor on nights before drug tests, but if I drank beer, like Heineken's, I'd be okay. And I drank one too many Heineken's that night and went into court the next day, and I came up dirty for alcohol, and they sent me right back to a more intense program that was down the block, but still in Harlem. And I was supposed to be done and graduated, and I got sent right back. And when the Oxycontin epidemic was happening, and all my friends that I grew up with that I used with were using Oxycontin.
Yeah.
But, like, I couldn't do it. And I was totally against Oxycontin because that was like what killed my dad, what got my mother from using, my grandfather. Like, I was around it. Like, I knew, don't do that and I'll be okay.
Right.
You know, like, I always set those lines, like, don't do that and I'll be okay. And I remember when I was younger, I went to a cabin with one of my ex-girlfriend's parents and all them. And, like, this was the guy that would give the kids drugs, you know, like, and I would get Xanax from him, and he ran out of Xanax. And one day he gave me the yellow Percocet. And I was like, I don't even want that. I want the Xanax, but he didn't have any more. And he gave me one of those. And I was like, whoa,
right,
this is nice.
I've arrived.
You know, and later on, like, I started using the yellow Percocets, and again, like, I would
just
be able
opiates
to
opiates was your you kind of switched to the realm,
started getting into the opiates, but, like, nothing crazy yet. Like, it was still like I was working, I had the job that I had while I finished the program, and like, I'd be able to have a couple on my dresser and keep them there for days. I
yeah.
didn't smoke weed before work, you know, but I would, like, drink to the point where I'd black out at night with, you know, my chef friends. And, I mean, you know how the kitchens are.
Yeah.
And I'd get whacked. But then I'd be hungover for 2 days, and I'd wait till, you know, I'm better again and I'm able.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean I wasn't reckless and out of control. You know, I was never able to stop once I started.
Right, of
you
course.
Know? And oil. And, like, I was sniffing Xanax. And, you know, like, you'd come over, I'd have Ziplocs of fake Xanax. And my grandfather died. You know, he was dying for, like, a year. And again, like, this guy was my father, you know, like, I resented him so much, but, like, you know, you don't realize what's gone until it's gone, you know, right. Like, what you had until it's gone. And when he gone, it, like, it fucking ripped me apart. And, like, I've never even, like, even with all the drugs I was on, like, I've never felt that way. Besides when I was a kid, when my mom died, like, I felt like my insides were just ripped out. I was crying. And, you know, it tore the family apart. You know, like, he was, like, the last glue for the uncles that talked. And he died. And I mentioned I was engaged. Within a month of, like, his funeral, I came home from work one day, and there was just a note on the table that said, I'm out. You know, I was with her for almost 6 years. And there was just a note on the table. I'm out. You know, I can't deal with this anymore. Mm. And, you know, no discussion, no nothing, no nothing. And again, like we were talking about before, I just played the victim. What do you mean? Right. This is when you're leaving me? Well, this is when I was the most fucked up, you know, like,
right, of course.
Things happened in three. And, you know, they say that. And, you know, my grandfather died. She left me, and I was holding this girl hostage. That's all.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what they call them. Yeah, they call them hostages.
I remember she would find the heroin bags on the floor, and she would Google wax paper bags with skull and bones, and it would come up heroin. And I'd be like, that's not heroin, honey. Like, heroin you shoot. I sniff. That's dope. Like, try to justify it.
Oh,
you know?
My,
like,
God. Crazy,
and she would go for it because she's not an addict, you know?
And she didn't know.
And she didn't know. And, you know, she left. And then I'm catering a party and for a wedding at a hotel. And I'm loading an elevator. And I stick my hand to stop the elevator. And the elevator door closes my hand. And it's stuck for 15 minutes.
Ugh.
And my hand was mangled. And
you're so lucky you have your hand.
Yeah, I'm lucky I have my hand. And, I remember, like, it took 15 minutes for the FDNY to open the elevator, and they finally got it open, and the ambulance is trying to take me away, and I went into the room to go sniff some more dope and hit the crack real quick, and then they get me, they're like, come on, let's get in the ambulance, and I was like, wait, I forgot my water, and I went back in twice to go use real quick before they took me to the hospital.
Wow.
And they took me to the hospital, and from there, like, that's the third thing. The grandfather, the fiance leaving, my hand being mangled, and, like, that was it. I was off to the fucking races. You know, now I had an excuse to use drugs. I'm trying to go to doctors to get drugs. I stopped paying my rent. I'm in a rent-controlled, beautiful apartment in downtown Brooklyn, paying $1,500 a month for, like, a railroad three-room kitchen bath. And I just stopped paying rent completely. And one day I, you know, I'm running low on money, and, you know, I have this lawsuit going on where my hand got stuck, but, like, I'd pull out advances on it, but I'd run low and take another advance, and, you know, things would get low, and I called up a friend. I was like, well, not my friend, but a using addict that's from the streets with me.
Right.
I'd be like, why don't you come show me how to use needles? And, he came over. And, you know, he showed me how to use needles, and I shot up, and I did it for about a month. I didn't do it right, because mm-hmm. about 3 months later, I stopped and shooting for 3 months after a month of doing it. And I had one in my dresser drawer, and I remember this because everyone really remembers their first good high. And, I remember, like, I was like, let me do this again. And I pulled the syringe and I put it in, and I hit the vein this time, which I guess I was just muscle popping for that month.
I don't know.
I know you don't, because I know your story. But when you get it in the vein, it's a whole different story. And I was on cloud nine. Like, this is what I've been missing. This is it. This is it. This is all I need, you know? And,
yeah.
And I'm not paying my rent. Now I'm using drugs intravenously. I'm speedballing, doing heroin, smoking crack, and, like, out of control, not paying my rent, ran out of money, can't get any more advances. And, like, I end up being homeless for about 6 months. Like,
for real? Homeless?
Shooting up in project staircases, sleeping on the train, taking the 4-5 because it goes all the way to the Bronx. It's the longest ride, sleeping. And, like, about 4, 5, 6 months, you know?
I didn't know that.
You
know, so what finally brought you to your knees?
She was a girl that I had met when I got out. And, you know, like, I hated the meetings, but I liked the girl. So I'd go to the meetings because the girl was at the meetings. And then I'd go meet the girl and we'd hang out before the meeting, after the meeting, during the meeting and after the meeting, you know? And I was still using, but I wanted to go hang out with the girl, right? You know, so like I would go to the meetings and I'd do my best, you know, but, and I would, you know, take what I needed and leave the rest because I knew better than everyone else.
Of course, you'd already been to these. You
and,
knew what it was.
You know, we were together for a little bit and I get, you know, my 30 days, my 90 days, and I would always be like, oh, I did good. I deserved to get high, you know. Like
but weren't you getting...
Yeah, I would get a legit 30.
Oh, you would.
A legit 60. And then I'd go right back out to doing it, you know, and use again, get sick, deal with it, get sick. And it was just like, you know, the vicious cycle of craziness and what I put my body through is ridiculous. You know, I ended up, you know, me and the girl were living together. I left the girl to go use, and I was sleeping on couches and I'd stay in a hotel or something. And she let me back in the house. And, but I was still getting high. And, yeah. And again, I wasn't using light, you know, I was using fentanyl, and, I would bring the drugs back into the house and she had 3 years clean. And, she wanted to like smoke my weed pen and she, I didn't let her, but she took the weed pen and hit the weed pen. And then she called me from work and asked me to get her Xanax. And I got her the Xanax.
Basically, you guys started using together.
Yeah, I'll go through it because it happens very quick. And the next day after the Xanax, you know, she was eating them like a party monster. You know, she's like, get whatever. And, you know, like, I'm using that. You give me money, I'm going to go get whatever. You know how I am. I'm a party animal. Like, I use everything under the sun.
Yeah.
Except I don't like hallucinogenics. I've done them. Not my thing. But everything else, by all means. And, but opiates are my favorite. And, you know, I went out and I bought a party. I bought, you know, I bought the crack. I bought the fentanyl. I bought the hair. Everything.
You and listened.
Yeah, I listened. She asked and she got it. And I came back and it was, you know, she smoked weed on one day, the Xanax on the next day, and we partied that Friday and she overdosed. And I gave her chest compressions. She turned blue. FDNY came, Narcan'd her 4 times. And, you know, went to the hospital, you know, and like I'm telling the EMTs that I'll take the Uber there, and they're like, you can come with us. And I was like, all right, I wanted to use real quick, but I grabbed the drugs, put them in my pocket, and you know, I remember when we got there convincing her, like, let's leave, you know, they already Narcan'd you, you're good to go, you know, like,
right.
I've seen this a million times. I used one more time the next day. I went and picked up, and then I locked the door. And I stayed inside. I didn't go to detox this time. I didn't go to rehab. And I just locked the door. And she was going to meetings every day after that happened.
And you were just cold turkey.
Shitting myself, dying, restless legs. She'd come in, like, and we sleep in the same bed, obviously. She'd be out cold sleeping, and I'd be up. Like, anyone that has gone through heroin withdrawal knows that you do not sleep for, like, 3 months. Not 15 minutes, not 10 minutes. You don't sleep. And like when you finally get that first 15 minutes of sleep, it feels like you slept 20 hours and you wake up and it's only 15 minutes later and you're like, what? But I finally slept.
Why isn't time,
you know,
living?
And like she'd be out cold next to me and I just like want to like, what, you're sleeping.
Yeah.
And, you know, I made it to 2 days. You know, it's 2 days is the best because it's the only time you could double your clean time overnight. Right. And, you know, like I got to 2, I got to 3. And like by the time, I think it was like day 9 or so, something around there. When the drugs started really leaving my body, because I've been on drugs for so long and heavy drugs.
Yeah.
Like the feeling started coming and I was so angry and so fucking everything that I didn't even know, because I don't know what feelings are. I've been numb for so long. I was like, I need to call somebody and I need to go to a meeting. Like I need to talk about this because I need to let it out.
Yeah.
And I called, you know, the guy that was my sponsor by name only the last time I was around.
Yeah.
Who is, you know, still a very good friend of mine. I called him up and I was like, I need to go to a meeting and I need to talk and I need to get, what do I do? And, you know, I went to a meeting And I was angry. I was really fucking angry. And I still fucking hated all of you. I did. And I'd go in and I'd just rant. I'd rant. And nothing, gibberish.
Yeah.
And I'd rant.
And everyone would be like, just keep coming back.
Yeah. And then, you know, I picked up the 30 days. You know, I did, you know, 90 and 90, they say. I did like fucking 250 in 90 days. I was going to meetings in the afternoon, meetings at night, sometimes one after that meeting. And
at this point, is your settlement money in?
Not yet, but it's coming.
Okay.
It's almost there. And I made it to, so I picked up the 30-day keychain, 60-day keychain, 90-day keychain. I know you like talking about COVID. I got to 100 days. That was my last meeting before they shut New York City down.
Wow.
Like that, they shut New York City down the day before, and we found one meeting that opened that night, and I went, and I'm like, you know, like, I told you, I've been in and out. Like,
yeah.
If there's any reason to not continue this bullshit, it's now.
Yeah.
You know, like, why not? Like, they're telling me.
Yeah.
You don't need NA, right? And, you know, I had a running crew because those 90 days, when you go into 200 meetings in 90 days, you find a group that's with you.
Yeah.
And we started our own meeting, and we did one in a park. And then the next day we started doing it at Coney Island on the beach, and the beach was empty because everybody was locked in their house.
Yeah.
And it went from five people.
Oh, and it's starting to be spring. So it's not that bad.
No, it was the middle of, well, December.
March.
So it was December 9th is my clean date. So December 9th, January 9th, February 9th. So February, you still got like 2-3 months of dead winter on the beach. Like, it's cold on the beach in the middle of winter.
You guys want to be sober if you're on the beach.
Oh, yeah. We'll talk about the gifts. You know, I'm still with the girl. We're engaged. We lived on a beautiful apartment in the beach that I got tired of. You know, I got tired of New York. You know, I grew up there for most of my life and wanted to get out of there. And that's when I contacted you, and you, because I could tell by your posts. I knew you were in Florida, but I could tell by the way you talked, you were in recovery.
Oh, really?
And And then I was like, oh, you, blah, blah, blah. And you were like, yeah. And I was like, me too. And you know, you were unsure about me because I'm like that with some people too. I'm like, I don't know about this one.
Yeah.
I'll meet you, but like, let me be on my, because I was always, I have a friend and he moved, he's from Brooklyn, but he moved to Jersey. He would say, it's just like UFC and boxing, you know, recovery, protect yourself at all times.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, my sobriety, my clean time, like, sure, this is mine.
Yeah.
I worked hard for this shit. You ain't taking this from me. You
right.
know, like, I'm going to do what I can to defend myself. And, you know, because of all the gifts I've received, you know, I met the love of my life. We're getting married. You know, we got a beautiful apartment. We have a dog. Like, I'm grateful for that.
I love that. And I'm so happy you live down here. And, you know, life does get busy, but it's so nice to even see you, like, a little bit, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So tell me, I ask everyone this question, and I really appreciate you coming on, but if you could go back and tell young Petey anything.
It's going to be all right.
Yeah. I love that.
It's going to be all right.
You're going to make me cry. Well, you're definitely a good guy, and you were so helpful to me always, even when I was a freaking mess.
You too.
So thank you again. It means so much to me. And let's hug.
Awesome.
Okay.